You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At least two-thirds of the nation's fire departments are understaffed, and police departments are watching the Bush administration phase out Clinton-era community policing programs. New York City has found its fire departments increasingly understaffed, forcing the city to close fire stations. Other cities have wound up temporarily closing stations until new funding can be found. The National Fire Protection Association says that the worst shortages are in rural areas where many departments are having trouble recruiting new volunteers. As for police departments, the Bush administration has said that training and staffing should be a local responsibility and has drastically cut funding. New York City, on average, has lost 1,000 officers per year for the last 3 years.
Unions representing Department of Homeland Security workers are calling for the withdrawal of a secrecy pledge they say would keep whistleblowers from going public with problems within the department. Homeland Security workers are required to abide by a pledge not to disclose unclassified information to the public. John Gage of the American Federation of Government Employees and Colleen Kelly, president of the National Treasury Employees Union, both say that the Department of Homeland Security pledge of secrecy puts unprecedented restrictions on free speech rights of workers. The form that Homeland Security workers are forced to sign also gives the government unprecedented access to workers' homes for searches that the union leaders say violate the constitutional right to be protected from unreasonable searches and seizures. Union lawyers have sent letters to Homeland Security executives. More than 60,000 Homeland Security workers are represented by the two unions.
With their strike entering its sixth day, Pennsylvania Turnpike workers are returning to the negotiation table. Managers and temporary employees have been manning the booths during the walkout, and the Turnpike Commission has been charging a flat $2 fee per car and $15 per commercial vehicle. Members of Teamsters Local 77 and 250, representing more than 2,000 employees, have been working under the conditions of a contract that expired in September of 2003. Negotiations broke down when the commission refused union demands for retroactive pay.
Walmart workers at a store in Loveland, Colorado, are headed toward a union organizing effort. United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 7 says this store could be the first in the U.S. Walmart chain to become unionized. 17 workers in a Walmart Tire and Lube Express service center have signed union cards. The workers will get a hearing in Denver before the National Labor Relations Board to certify their petition and set a date for the union election. Here's today's Dow Bob report. The universal health care decried by conservatives in America has given France the best health care system in the world. That's according to the World Health Organization. French workers get both universal care and the right to choose their own doctors. French workers get 85% of their health care costs paid. France has a better infant mortality rate than the U.S. and delivers all this high-quality universal health care for much less. $4,200 per year is what it costs in America. In France, it's $2,200 per person per year. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Talk about bitter irony. George W. wrapped himself in the flag and campaigned under a political theme of support our troops. Yet, even as he campaigned, troops in Iraq continue to die precisely because he has failed shamefully to support them. All the political rah-rah stuff in the world won't stop roadside bombs and other blasts. For the deadly reality of war, our troops need the best protective armor and equipment there is. But even now, their commander-in-chief continues to short them, especially the National Guard and reservists who are doing much of the most dangerous work in Iraq. For months, entire units have gone begging for the most basic steel plates needed to armor their Humvees against the deadly blasts they encounter daily. Families of soldiers have offered to buy these steel plates themselves, but have been rejected by commanders who keep promising that the Army will provide better equipment soon. Soon never seems to come, and soldiers literally are reduced to scavenging scrap pieces of sheet metal and sandbags to provide some makeshift protection, though this has not stopped the deaths and maimings. The Bushites loudly contend that they have spared no expense to outfit the troops. But the soldiers, their families, and the daily body counts say otherwise. In fact, while the Pentagon has said that it plans to retrofit some 4,400 trucks in Iraq with armor kits, it had provided only about 800 of the kits by mid-September. As the mother of one National Guardsman put it, if we're one of the richest nations in the world, our soldiers shouldn't be sent out looking like the Beverly Hillbillies. The Pentagon now says it hopes to have all Humvees armored by next April, a full year and more than 1,000 deaths after Bush launched his poorly prepared war. This is Jim Hightower saying, to demand that Washington support our troops with more than political rhetoric, call Operation Truth, 212-982-9699.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, the Democrats know how to do it. The Republicans know how to do it. The Republicans, in fact, did it in the United States in the year 2000. Why haven't the Democrats? What is it? We'll get to that in just a second. Welcome to the program. Greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming around the planet on radiopower.org with archives at whiteRoseSociety.org and at TomHartman.com. You can hear hour by hour, you can hear entire shows at White Rose Society and clips by topic at TomHartman.com. Also, if you want to drop into our chat room for live chat, some of the finest, most intelligent, sometimes strangest, sometimes sexiest, sometimes cutest, sometimes oddest, and always, well, yeah, always, it's not often I'm speechless. Always great. Let's just leave it at that. Chat on the Internet. No, some really, really extraordinary people hang out in our chat room. You've got to get to know these folks. Go to TomHartman.com and click Live Chat. It'll take you to the CompuServe Democratic Forum on CompuServe. If you're not a CompuServe or AOL member, just click Guest, and it lets you in, and you can hang out and participate. No cost or anything like that. Our number, 1-866-889-8894, also if you'd like to be on the program. So what is it the Democrats and the Republicans have figured out how to do? Well, they're doing it. Here's a clue. They're doing it right now in Ukraine, what used to be called the Ukraine. I guess in some places still is called the Ukraine. They're doing it right now. They first did it in Serbia. They do it through a couple of organizations affiliated with the Democratic and Republican Party. The one affiliated with the Democratic Party is called the National Democratic Institute for International Affairs. Their website is www.ndi.org. The chairman is Madeleine Albright. It would be fascinating to see her on some of these talk shows. We ought to see if we can get her on this program to talk about this stuff. Make a note there. And John McCain is the chairman of the Republican equivalent, which is called the International Republican Institute, www.iri.org. And both of these organizations, which have close relationships to the political parties of similar name, although they're not wholly owned by, that would be a violation of various federal and tax laws and whatnot, both of these organizations have joined forces with other non-governmental organizations and U.S. government agencies. Yes, specific agencies such as this U.S. State Department, Colin Powell's group, you know, now soon to be Condi Rice's group, the U.S. Agency for International Development, George Soros's Open Society Institute, and the late Eleanor Roosevelt's organization, Freedom House. Now, Freedom House was an extraordinary organization. When Eleanor Roosevelt started it, it was dedicated to promoting democracy around the world. It is, we had on this program some time ago, Ambassador Mark, oh my. Anyhow, I'm losing his last name, who had written a book about the march of democracy all around the world and what was happening and how it was happening. And Democracy House, unfortunately, is now chaired by R. James Woolsey, the notorious war profiteer and former CIA director and neocon hawk, and who loves to go on radio talk shows and TV programs all over the country and flog how, you know, the wonders of the Bush administration. So he's there with Freedom House, but that's kind of the only fly in the ointment, I guess. And what they've been doing is they've been working to flip these elections, and so far they've done it in 3 out of 4 countries. I want to get into that in some considerable detail a little later on in the program. But before we do, first, I want to share with you some thoughts from north of the border, a border that's only about 2 hours from me here in the People's Republic of Vermont. But I know some of our listeners, well, all over the country, maybe quite some distance to Canada. Maybe you've not even been to Canada in your life. A marvelous country, let me tell you. And now there's this discussion in the Toronto Star a couple days ago or last week about whether or not George W. Bush should be charged with war crimes when he shows up today. He's going to Halifax tomorrow. The Halifax Peace Coalition is organizing a rally outside City Hall to coincide with his showing up. They're going to carry signs saying he's not welcome. Of course, the crowds are going to be handpicked. Bush is not going to have to see any of the protesters, as he never does. I mean, his people are very, very good at protecting him. Very, very good at protecting him. So to get the Canadian perspective on this, we have Justin Potter. Am I pronouncing that right, Justin?
Yes.
Hey, Justin Potter, who does a great blog, a Canadian blog, killingtrain.com, and a Canadian writer and activist. And, Justin, what's the Canadian take on George W.'s visit?
Well, there's the protests that are going to take place in Ottawa right now, and, well, starting, they're probably starting even as we speak. I'm still on the bus heading over. But primarily, they have to do with the Iraq War. And a lot of the images that I think Americans saw, Canadians saw as well. So, for example, Abu Ghraib and the latest assault on Fallujah. And they made a pretty severe impact on a lot of Canadians, and yes, a lot of Canadians see these as war crimes and reject them, and we want to make that really clear to our government, which is increasingly trying to play a role in U.S. foreign policy, whether in Iraq or other parts of the world.
Why do you think it is that, well, first of all, isn't there a fairly broad consensus in Canada that the largest war crime that George W. Bush has committed is not all these small, relatively small incidents, you know, Abu Ghraib and so on, but in fact is the invasion of a country that represented no threat in the first place. It's the last time this happened on by a major Western democracy or so-called democracy at the time was when Hitler invaded Poland. And, the world kind of freaked out. Or you could say when he annexed Austria, that was his first one, and Poland was the second one. But Poland was portrayed as a full-scale invasion, and Hitler ginned that up for about 6 months in advance by talking about how the Poles were massing weapons of mass destruction on their border. They had an army on their border. They were firing across the border. They had killed some German soldiers, blah, 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 all of which was false. And yet the German people bought it, and when the Germans liberated Poland, most of the German people were four square behind it because they'd bought the media hype that Goebbels and Hitler had put out, so the real war crime here was the actual invasion of a country that represented no threat to us in the first place.
That's right, and the phrase used by Hitler, I think, is telling. He said, I think he was describing actually Czechoslovakia. When he said, they have they're a dagger pointed at the heart of Germany.
Yes.
And I remember Condoleezza's phrase about the we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud or whatever. So
yeah.
So I think there are some scary parallels. But you're completely right. There's a group called Lawyers Against the War. Michael Mandel and Gail Davidson have been putting out some fantastic stuff. They put a memo out to the immigration minister in Canada arguing that we shouldn't be letting war criminals in and there are precedents for this. And they also argued for indicting Bush as a war criminal. And yeah, the phrasing they use is straight out of the Nuremberg Tribunal where they say that international aggression is the supreme war crime and it's all these other war crimes flow from that.
Yeah.
And I think Canadians do understand that and that's why there's so much opposition to this war in particular and also of course to the whole whole flouting of international law and norms and the international community that has been the course of U.S. foreign policy under Bush and unfortunately even before that.
Justin Potter, to what extent do your opinions reflect the mainstream in Canada, or do you think that you're representing, you know, what in America would be called the left fringe or something like that?
Well, I think I've spent a lot of time in the U.S. over the past few years, and there is definitely a difference in terms of the whole political spectrum in Canada and the U.S. Well, in the U.S. and pretty much everywhere else in the world, and you know the center of politics is definitely to the left here. So yes, in the States this would probably be a fringe position. It's not the case in the Canadian population. Unfortunately, though, the Canadian politicians are pretty out of touch with this. So if you take the latest polls, for example, have something like 80% of Canadians believe that the United States is a rogue nation. And Canadian politicians are going out of their way to try to make this a smooth visit. This is a quote that came out in the paper. So
why is that? Why is that, Justin? Why would that be, Justin? Why do you think that that's the case? Why are the politicians, if the people all view America, if 80% of Canadians view America as a rogue state, largely based on Iraq, I'm assuming, why would the politicians be bowing over and falling over? Is it just because they're concerned about the economic impact on trade?
Sure, we have a problem here that you all have in the United States as well, and that is that our politicians are more interested in representing the interests of corporations than they are of the people. And there are a lot of major Canadian corporations that are engaging in war profiteering right now. There's a number of companies that are supplying bullets, weapons, infrastructure, all to the United States military for the use of, for use against civilians in Iraq. So there's this corporate interest, and of course, other, particular politicians are arguing that because of trade in softwood lumber or because of trade in beef, Canada has to support the United States military adventures because otherwise we're going to lose our jobs.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, a really kind of cowardly and immoral argument because you're basically trading off people's lives because of a threat to jobs that the United States can make.
Yeah.
And they can only make that threat because our elites have
So that accounts for the difference. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Justin, we have less than a minute left. Just one quick question that I always like to ask Canadians when I get them on the program, if you don't mind. It's off topic. I'm wondering if you have ever or if you have ever in your life known anybody in Canada who has ever, in the length of your life, and you can let us know how long that is, gone to the United States to find medical care because the Canadian system is so badly broken.
I'm afraid not. No.
You've never known a single Canadian who came to America looking for medical services?
No.
Yeah,
sorry.
See, there you go. And here I live in Vermont. We have busloads of Vermonters. Our congressman, Bernie Sanders, helped organize them. We have busloads of Vermonters who go to Canada to get medical services every month. It's amazing.
Well, yeah,
it works up there.
Something that you should consider adopting.
Yeah, I agree. Justin, thanks for the perspective. Justin Potter, his website, killingtrain.com, is his blog. Justin, good luck on the demonstrations there, and let us know how it works out. Thanks for the call. Thanks for being on the program with us. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman program, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com. Or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school. They go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second in each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Never again, says the slogan in the email I received from an activist friend. Literally, I've been getting all these emails from people saying, how can we let them steal an election? How can we? You know, there's been a hand recount done. You can find this at democraticunderground.com. Been a hand recount done on a couple of counties in Florida, and they all show a shift. Once they do the hand recount, you discover that there's more votes for Kerry than they thought. And if you simply apply the percentage of shift that's happened in the counties that have so far been hand recounted to the entire state, now that doesn't mean it's going to happen. That, you know, it doesn't mean that every county in the state is going to show that kind of a shift. But if it did, then John Kerry would take the state of Florida. Nobody has obviously recounted the entire state. And you'll recall when they did recount the entire state, the News Consortium back in 2001 turned out that by any measure you used, Al Gore got more votes than George W. Bush in Florida. Of course, that didn't stop the Supreme Court from preventing that from becoming an issue. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. The question, how to stop or take back a stolen election? Not so much necessarily this one, although we can talk about that. The 2002 election, in my opinion, the Georgia election, at the very least, was stolen. In the 2000 election, certainly Florida was stolen. It's well documented now. Why are we not responding the way the Ukrainians did? I have some, I think, pretty remarkable information for you about that. First, let's take a phone call. Billy in Santa Cruz, California on the line. Hey, Billy, welcome to the program.
Hey. Yeah, I'm embarrassed by how much the Ukrainians understand democracy better than we do.
Well, you know, they do it because a bunch of Serbian kids showed up there.
And they do it because for them it's new and valuable, and we've lost our caring for it.
No, I don't think that's true. I'm serious, Billy. The reason that they're doing this is because there's a group of young political activists in Serbia who are like hired guns.
I was going to say, Serbia's not in Ukraine.
I know. Serbia is far away from the Ukraine. But they did this in Serbia with the funding from Freedom House and from the Democratic Party and the Republican Party and the State Department. They did this and they overthrew Milosevic. And they actually were supporting, in overthrowing Milosevic, supporting an anti-American guy, Kostunica, the guy who's, you know, the emperor of Serbia, the president of Serbia now. He's not pro-American. But we helped him get elected because we knew that Milosevic was going to rig the elections. And what they did was they came up with a slogan, which was, he's out. They came up with a logo, which was a raised fist, which could be stenciled on sidewalks, you know, spray painted over through a stencil, just, you know, cut out of a piece of paper or cardboard. And they stenciled the whole city with these things, or the whole country. They used exit polls during the election. And the night of the election, they released the exit poll results and made all kinds of noise. Now, at that time, the state controlled all the media in Serbia. So they did it on the internet.
As they do here.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And you know, I'm just going to say one more word about that, because sure, that's not what I called about.
Okay.
And then I'll move on.
And then I'll get back to it. Yeah.
And the reason, by the way, that it's so different in America is three words, skull and bones.
Well, I don't think
Kerry
so.
Kerry promised. Part of his. Do you know what the what the rights are that make you part of Skull and Bones?
Yeah, I'm somewhat familiar. Yeah, I'm
and
not a member.
Part of it is you swear never to bring a lawsuit against another Bonesman.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Anyway, here's the issue I want to talk about today.
Sure.
This is another one of my tutorials in how what hypocrisy the Republican Party extends to. Hmm. So today's is simple. They constantly talk about, you know, why it's so important that Christians be in control of this country, and they go back to the founding fathers. The founding fathers were Christians, or the founding fathers said this. And I don't know why we do that. I don't know why we don't think about tomorrow and what's a good idea. But here's the hypocrisy. How come they want to go back to the founding fathers and completely ignore the founding fathers when it comes to foreigners being allowed to be president?
Well,
get where I'm going?
Yeah, although the larger point is that they're not accurate about the founding fathers either. Jefferson,
of
Washington,
not.
Madison, they were all Franklin, they were all
time.
Yeah, they were all deists. They were all deists. Yeah, good point, Billy. And in fact, you know, there's a whole chapter about this in my book, What Would Jefferson Do, in which I lay out the arguments that the founders we're just emphatic about keeping religion out of government for a lot of good reasons. We'll get into that later. 29 minutes past the hour.
No, you may not hang at the park. Yes, even if all your friends are there. Go to Mrs. Feldman's till I'm home from work.
Keeping tabs on your kid after school isn't easy.
Yes, tomorrow too.
But if you don't, she's more likely to do drugs.
No, I am not easier on your brother.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At least two-thirds of the nation's fire departments are understaffed, and police departments are watching the Bush administration phase out Clinton-era community policing programs. New York City has found its fire departments increasingly understaffed, forcing the city to close fire stations. Other cities have wound up temporarily closing stations until new funding can be found. The National Fire Protection Association says that the worst shortages are in rural areas where many departments are having trouble recruiting new volunteers. As for police departments, the Bush administration has said that training and staffing should be a local responsibility and has drastically cut funding. New York City, on average, has lost 1,000 officers per year for the last 3 years.
Unions representing Department of Homeland Security workers are calling for the withdrawal of a secrecy pledge they say would keep whistleblowers from going public with problems within the department. Homeland Security workers are required to abide by a pledge not to disclose unclassified information to the public. John Gage of the American Federation of Government Employees and Colleen Kelly, president of the National Treasury Employees Union, both say that the Department of Homeland Security pledge of secrecy puts unprecedented restrictions on free speech rights of workers. The form that Homeland Security workers are forced to sign also gives the government unprecedented access to workers' homes for searches that the union leaders say violate the constitutional right to be protected from unreasonable searches and seizures. Union lawyers have sent letters to Homeland Security executives. More than 60,000 Homeland Security workers are represented by the two unions.
With their strike entering its sixth day, Pennsylvania Turnpike workers are returning to the negotiation table. Managers and temporary employees have been manning the booths during the walkout, and the Turnpike Commission has been charging a flat $2 fee per car and $15 per commercial vehicle. Members of Teamsters Local 77 and 250, representing more than 2,000 employees, have been working under the conditions of a contract that expired in September of 2003. Negotiations broke down when the commission refused union demands for retroactive pay.
Walmart workers at a store in Loveland, Colorado are headed toward a union organizing effort. United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 7 says this store could be the first in the U.S. Walmart chain to become unionized. 17 workers in a Walmart Tire and Lube Express service center have signed union cards. The workers will get a hearing in Denver before the National Labor Relations Board to certify their petition and set a date for the union election. Here's today's Dow Bob report. The universal health care decried by conservatives in America has given France the best health care system in the world. That's according to the World Health Organization. French workers get both universal care and the right to choose their own doctors. French workers get 85% of their health care costs paid. France has a better infant mortality rate than the U.S. and delivers all this high-quality universal health care for much less. $4,200 per year is what it costs in America. In France, it's $2,200 per person per year. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
To walk within the lines would make my life so boring. I want to know that I have been to the extreme.
Yes, indeed. All the way to the extreme of taking back an election. It's been done now 2 out of 4 times, the 3 out of 4. If Ukraine, you know, they're having a new election, so I guess you could say it's been done 3 out of 4 times. And here now the latest news out of Ukraine, they're going to have a new election, apparently. And this was exposed by Ian Trainer, who's a brilliant writer. He writes for The Guardian. He's a Eastern European correspondent. And been doing some just absolutely marvelous reporting over the last couple of years. Some of the stuff that Ian Trainer comes up with is just extraordinary. And he discovered that there is this group, and that they have been brought into these countries, and it's mostly, you know, a bunch of activist students. And I'm telling you, if MoveOn.org or whatever, you know, if there's a group out there, Americans coming together, whatever, that is looking for a mission statement for the next 2 years, this should be it. Prepare for mass mobilization in the event of a stolen election, because these guys have done it. There has been massive election fraud perpetrated now in each of the last 3 elections. And the Republicans know how to get a fraudulent election reversed. They have participated in this thing in the Ukraine. And that's why they are now saying, oh, we can't have exit polls in the United States. You know, it wouldn't be a good idea. Here we have, the former Enron lobbyist and current head of the Republican National Committee, suggesting, Ed Gillespie, of course, suggesting, here's his quote. This was published in TV Week, of all places. But anyhow, this is his quote. It's from the 4th of November, 2 days after the election. And I quote, in 2000, the exit data was wrong on election day. In 2002, the election returns were wrong on election day. In 2004, the exit data were wrong on election day. All three times, by the way, in a way that skewed against Republicans and had a dispiriting effect on Republican voters across the country. End quote. I would say each one of those three elections was an opportunity for mass mobilization. The Democrats blew it. They didn't do it the way that they did in Serbia and the Ukraine and Belarus. And they could have. And they should in 2006. And the Republicans are already launching a shot across the bow, a preemptive shot, saying, no, there should be no exit polls. Now, why would someone say that unless they're planning on rigging an election? That's the same thing that they're saying in the Soviet states. That's Vlad Putin's line. No exit polls. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Ed, New Jersey on the line. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program. Oh, I'm sorry, that's not Ed. That's Sheila in Toronto, Canada. Hey, Sheila.
Yes, hi. Calling from Toronto for another Canadian perspective.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
I cannot just understand how people are not reacting to this. And maybe there's, you know, nobody paying for a mobilization.
What's the this that you're talking about reacting to?
People not reacting in the U.S.
To what?
To whatever, you can call it a stolen election or impropriety or whatever you want to call it.
Hmm.
Why is there no reaction? This is so amazing. And nobody's going to do it unless there is visible public pressure. And I don't understand, does John Kerry just have the choice to say that, you know, I did offer my candidacy, well, now it's too messy and I'm just going to stay out of it?
Well, he
is
does.
Is it really up to him?
To some extent it is. You know, we'll see. Now we've got Jesse Jackson in the mix. But here's why it's happening the way it is in the United States. The Republicans saw, and what baffles me, frankly, Sheila, is why the Democrats aren't up on this. And I think that this goes back to the incompetent campaign that, you know, Bob Schrum and his buddies have been running for so many cycles now. But and why, you know, progressives need to take over the Democratic Party, because it's moribund. It's rotting from within. But in any case, here's what happened. The Republicans participated in these four flipped elections over the last 4 years. Outside the United States, the Soviet Republic of Georgia, Belarus, Serbia, and the Ukraine. The Republican Party participated in these, and they saw, and they know, that if you can grab public opinion before it's formed, you have the upper hand, and the party in power then ends up being the ones who are reactive rather than proactive. In fact, this is what they did in Florida in 2000. When they did, and it was a very sophisticated campaign. They flew Tom DeLay's entire staff down from Washington, D.C. in an Enron jet and had them show up at where they were counting the votes in Florida. And the media all thought these were local Floridians and that the riot. And that helped, you know, and then, of course, George Bush sued Al Gore to stop the recount. And that lawsuit went all the way to the Supreme Court. But if the Democrats had done the same thing, if they had gotten out their demonstration, then you know, they could have, Al Gore would be president right now, because it turns out that when the New York Times actually did a recount, it was published on September 12th, 2001, the day after 9/11, ironically, Al Gore actually did get more votes in Florida, no matter how you figure it. I mean, this is just, you know, it's been reported in the press. It's not in dispute.
Right. But see, we know that the Democratic leadership is not going to do it. But what about the people who stood, who got so mobilized, voted for Kerry, wanted Bush out? Why won't
This, Sheila, is the piece that they were missing. What they were missing was understanding the tactics of the other side. What they were missing was understanding that you have to wage a public relations campaign, a marketing campaign, if you will, in addition to an electoral campaign. And it doesn't end at the voting booth. It actually begins big time in the middle of the day when the vote is happening. If there is, if the exit polls are showing any evidence at all of fraud, that's the time to be yelling and screaming from the rooftops. And the Democrats completely blew it on this. They didn't have independent exit polls that they could point to. Instead, the exit polls are being done by a corporation that seems to have close ties, at least if not to the, quote, establishment, perhaps even to the Republican Party. And so now they're backpedaling, right, and they're changing the exit polls. And so they lost the PR battle before it even began. That's why. You know, the latest survey I saw shows that more than 80% of Americans right now believe that the election was fair, honest, and proceeded without any significant glitches.
But did you see the Fox News poll yesterday?
No.
It said 63% are not convinced by the results and 37% are.
Well, that's interesting. Okay, because my 80% number is about 3 days old. That's the result of, you know, Jesse Jackson going on TV. I mean, there's the word is getting out slowly and mostly out of the internet and Keith Olbermann. But but it's possible. It's possible that there will be enough public pressure to change this. But frankly, I think that what we need to be doing is planning for the 2006 elections. If the Democrats, or Democrats and Independents, or Democrats and well-aligned Greens, although we don't want to get into internecine warfare because we do have a two-party system here, unlike your proportional representation up there, if the Democrats can take back either the House or the Senate, or ideally both, then you have the Nixon situation. Nixon was elected with a much larger majority than was George W. Bush. He took every single state in the country except Massachusetts. Every single state except Massachusetts. You know, 49 out of 50 states in 72. And yet, 18 months later, he was out of office. He was threatening, you know, he was facing impeachment. Why? Because the House and the Senate were controlled by Democrats and they could investigate him. The only agencies that can investigate the president are the House or the Senate or the Attorney General's office. And I think that that's why George W. Bush just appointed as Attorney General his former, his own personal lawyer, right, Alberto Gonzalez, who was his lawyer in Texas, was his lawyer as governor, was his lawyer at the White House, you know, blah, blah, blah. Of course, Gonzalez is not going to investigate Bush. So that's what I think. You know, we need to be focusing on 2006, taking back the House and Senate, and it needs to begin today, and it needs to be a process. The political parties, of course, need to be doing their homework, the Democrats in particular, and progressives who are trying to infiltrate the Democratic Party. But in addition to that, it needs to go a step beyond that. One of these independent groups out there needs to become a central focal point for organizing the demonstrations and protests and mass rallies and whatnot that will happen on the evening of the first Tuesday of November of 2006, in my opinion. Sheila, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. It's great to hear. What, by the way, before you go, they're in Canada. You know, we heard from I think Jason was his name. Yeah, Jason.
Justin.
Justin, yeah.
Justin.
We heard from him. What, in your opinion, what percentage of Canadians that the United States has gone down the wrong road here by having George W. as our president?
Well, I haven't spoken to one who doesn't. And, you know, I am at a university which has 50,000 students.
Mm-hmm.
And there's almost nobody here. Everybody's on the bus.
On the bus to Ottawa to protest Bush?
Yeah, or to Halifax, one of the two. The Halifax people have left before because they needed more time to get there.
Yeah.
So I really haven't met anyone, anything, which says that Bush is a good idea, except for people who are suffering from our strong loonie because of the way our corporate sector works.
Your currency. The loonie is your currency.
So aligned to the U.S. corporate sector. Other than out of Bay Street, which is not very far from where I am, I haven't talked to anybody, read anything that is in support of Bush.
Interesting. Okay. Sheila, thanks for the call. My other last obligatory question to all Canadians, Sheila, do you know any...
No.
Okay. You've never met a Canadian who in desperation came to America.
I will tell you, though, there is, in Canada, there is a problem with the healthcare system, which is not because it's public, but because people are trying to create a two-tier and privatized system, seeing that the U.S. has more choice.
Yeah.
And so there are some problems which are because of underfunding. And so with things like cancer screening, sometimes there are long waits and people have gone down to Buffalo only for That's the only place where I've heard. Mm-hmm. But that is not because of what we have, but because of what people are trying to make it.
Because of the privatization efforts that are
underway. Some vested interest insurance companies would love to have the HMO-type model that you
have there. I know that you pay about one-third. Canada, on a per capita basis, pays about one-third what America does for health care, and yet you have no uninsured people in Canada. And if you paid, if you paid about half of what we pay, you would not have any long lines.
Right. So now they think that if, you know, if the part of it could be tiered, some people can pay more. That's been the plan of some people. So they've been trying to break the public system and say, look, look, this is not really working. We need to see what's out of the border.
It's the same thing
and
that's happening.
And that's created a lot of the problem. But otherwise, we're fine.
Okay. It's the same thing that's happening with Social Security. Sheila, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Ed in New Jersey on the line. Hey, Ed.
Hello, Tom. Just wanted to let you know I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Just started listening recently, and I heard you say about giving up on this election and starting on the next election. I don't really agree with you with that.
Well, I didn't say give up. If change can happen, if people can pull it off, I'm all in favor of that. And I encourage Jesse Jackson. I had David Cobb on the program last week. I salute him for the work he's doing. I was publicizing his efforts to get people to go to votecobb.org and donate money so that they could recount Ohio. I'm all in favor of all of those things. I've written a couple of the articles that raised some of the initial questions. One of my articles was shown on TV by Peter Jennings on ABC News. Although he was making fun of it, it was shown on TV. No, I'm not saying it's over, go away. What I'm saying is I'm guessing it's over. You know, I hope I'm wrong, but I'm guessing
it's over. I do, too. I wish the mainstream media would pick up on this. I've been listening to what Bev Havras was doing recently with her organization. She's turning up a lot of
we had her on this show last Tuesday of last week, I believe it was.
I'm sorry, I missed that one. But I really, you know, like with what's going on that I hear about in Florida and Ohio, I don't know why our Justice Department's not getting involved in it.
Well, it's not.
The mainstream media jump all over it, too, because that's why the regular people don't hear about this.
Yeah, well, there's this herd mentality in the mainstream media, and there's also the I don't want to be the next Dan Rather. You get a bunch of people. You have the media now has gotten so into infotainment, and news has become such a profit center that, I mean, they even, you know, use news to cross promote things. Like they'll have news stories about new media, about new movies that are coming out that just by coincidence were made by the same corporation that owns the network, right?
I understand, but it's going to cost our democracy.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I think that the Sherman Act needs to be applied to media corporations.
Here.
Yeah, this is why I think that the Sherman Act needs to be applied to media corporations as well as to all corporations. We need to be looking at those kinds of problems. But the larger issue is that we need to be prepared in the United States for the theft of elections. As long as we have private corporations telling us that we have no right to see how they're handling our vote, and they openly have allegiances to one political party, whether it's Republicans or Democrats. I mean, in this case, it's all Republicans. But even if it was Democrats, I would be equally outraged. It's just not right. It's just not right. It doesn't look good. It doesn't. You know, Ed, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. It doesn't look good. This is not good for democracy. Just not good for democracy. And it's time for us to get out in the streets and say so. But the reality is that things like that don't happen spontaneously. This is the great myth that Americans are operating under. So many Americans, they look at what's going on in Ukraine right now and they go, gee, that must have just happened spontaneously. It didn't happen spontaneously. No more than Rosa Parks refusing to go to the back of the bus was spontaneous. The Rosa Parks, which sparked off the civil rights, you know, a large chunk of the civil rights movement in the 1960s, Rosa Parks had for 12 years been a member of the of one of the major, I forget which one it was, one of the major Southern, mostly African American, anti-apartheid, anti-segregation, pro-civil rights groups, one of the major civil rights groups. And she had been attending meetings. She was a secretary to the group. She was very active. And when she refused to go to the back of the bus, they were ready. I mean, this was an event that was planned. And it was turned and it became a publicity bonanza. And that's what the folks in Ukraine did. That's what the folks in Serbia did. That's what the folks in Belarus did. This is what the folks in the Soviet Republic, former Soviet Republic of Georgia did. And it has to be organized and planned in order to work here in the United States. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir!
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the Southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
This is a WING feature story. I'm Sarah Turner. Thousands of people marched across India this week to protest Coke's water extraction program that they say is threatening their livelihoods.
It began in Balia, which is where there's one Coke plant, and marching to another Coke plant in Mediganj, 150 miles away in northeastern India.
Brian Hirsch, field organizer with Corporate Accountability International, says Coke is turning water from a basic human right into an unaffordable luxury.
Coke is draining water from some of the poorest communities in the world to make into bottled water and to sell as soft drinks. This is part of a much bigger problem of corporations contributing to global water shortage.
The United Nations estimates that two-thirds of the world's population will not have enough water by 2025.
India has a lot less groundwater regulations, and so they've got away with things like going into one community where they dried up hundreds of public hand-pumped wells, and now there's not enough water to meet basic needs. In another community, Mediganj, the water tables have dropped 40 feet, and actually over 40 feet, and it's been devastating to farmers. There's not enough water to irrigate crops.
Corporate Accountability International is demanding Coke never reopen its Plashimada plant, close its plant in Mediganji, and pay for damage done to affected communities.
Fortune magazine is saying that water will be to the 21st century what oil was in the 20th century. And this affects people all around the world, not just in India. There are corporations lining up to use technologies for water extraction in the United States, the Great Lakes, Alaska, the the American Midwest. So this affects everybody, and it's really important that we hold Coke accountable here in the United States because they're based here. And they'll, you know, we can really make our voices heard and make an impact on this issue.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. Well, I've been howling in my sleep. You've been starring in my dream. All right. And welcome back. It was the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, is what it used to be called. Now it's just called the NAACP. And Martin Luther King's organization and Carl Q12 Carl in our chat room points out Rosa Parks was a youth advisor with the NAACP. This is the thing. These things don't just come out of nowhere. People are sitting around going, oh, gee, wouldn't it be great if somebody organized a demonstration? Well, you know, there's not a somebody. There's, hey, here we are. You know, get active. Do something. And so, anyhow, I published this piece on commondreams.org today. If you go to www.commondreams.org, it's called How to Take Back a Stolen Election. And it lays out how they did it. How they did it in the Ukraine. And the carefully branded catchphrases, logos, slogans, parallel exit polls, all this stuff. It needs to be all stacked together, and it needs to spring into action on election day if there is any evidence of fraud. Now, the dark side of the force, as it were, is that it would be possible for a group that was well organized like this to come out with phony exit poll results and change a legitimate election. And in fact, that's what Vlad Putin is saying has happened in the Ukraine, although the international observers are disputing that. And that's why it's so important to bring in organizations like the OSCE, the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, which actually observed the U.S. elections and complained in their official report, their official UN report, that they weren't allowed in Florida and Ohio actually into the polling places to observe what was going on, and that they had big concerns about electronic voting machines where it was impossible to see how the vote was handled. But you didn't hear much of that on the press or in the media because nobody was quoting it, because we didn't plan an organized response to a dirty election. Whether it was stolen or not, time will tell, but it was nonetheless not a clean election, not by a long shot, and increasing evidence of that. By the way, just a heads up, in the second hour of our program, we're going to have our regular Tuesday NLP class. Today we're going to be talking about framing, how to take control of a conversation before it's even begun, and or a debate or a dialogue. And also I wanted to give you a heads up on Bernie Sanders, who's on our program every Friday. His website, bernie.house.gov, you can get on his newsletter list, and www.bernie.house.gov, and he's now soliciting stories from people who've been ripped off by credit card companies. They're going to hold hearings in Congress, and he's trying to make a big deal out of this. So if you'd like to know about that, get over there to that website and sign up and send him a message. He says, have you had your interest rates raised? Have been hit with late fees? Let people know. So there's a possibility for you too. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left.
In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At least two-thirds of the nation's fire departments are understaffed, and police departments are watching the Bush administration phase out Clinton-era community policing programs. New York City has found its fire departments increasingly understaffed, forcing the city to close fire stations. Other cities have wound up temporarily closing stations until new funding can be found. The National Fire Protection Association says that the worst shortages are in rural areas where many departments are having trouble recruiting new volunteers. As for police departments, the Bush administration has said that training and staffing should be a local responsibility and has drastically cut funding. New York City, on average, has lost 1,000 officers per year for the last 3 years.
Unions representing Department of Homeland Security workers are calling for the withdrawal of a secrecy pledge they say would keep whistleblowers from going public with problems within the department. Homeland Security workers are required to abide by a pledge not to disclose unclassified information to the public. John Gage of the American Federation of Government Employees and Colleen Kelly, president of the National Treasury Employees Union, both say that the Department of Homeland Security pledge of secrecy puts unprecedented restrictions on free speech rights of workers. The form that Homeland Security workers are forced to sign also gives the government unprecedented access to workers' homes for searches that the union leaders say violate the constitutional right to be protected from unreasonable searches and seizures. Union lawyers have sent letters to Homeland Security executives. More than 60,000 Homeland Security workers are represented by the two unions.
With their strike entering its sixth day, Pennsylvania Turnpike workers are returning to the negotiation table. Managers and temporary employees have been manning the booths during the walkout, and the Turnpike Commission has been charging a flat $2 fee per car and $15 per commercial vehicle. Members of Teamsters Local 77 and 250, representing more than 2,000 employees, have been working under the conditions of a contract that expired in September of 2003. Negotiations broke down when the commission refused union demands for retroactive pay.
Walmart workers at a store in Loveland, Colorado, are headed toward a union organizing effort. United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 7 says this store could be the first in the U.S. Walmart chain to become unionized. 17 workers in a Walmart Tire and Lube Express service center have signed union cards. The workers will get a hearing in Denver before the National Labor Relations Board to certify their petition and set a date for the union election. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The universal health care decried by conservatives in America has given France the best health care system in the world. That's according to the World Health Organization. French workers get both universal care and the right to choose their own doctors. French workers get 85% of their health care costs paid. France has a better infant mortality rate than the U.S. and delivers all this high-quality universal health care for much less. $4,200 per year is what it costs in America. In France, it's $2,200 per person per year. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Don't do it. Don't even think about it. The IT is giving up on America and moving to Canada or wherever. Some progressives, bemoaning both the tone and result of the presidential election, wail that they no longer recognize their country and can't stand the thought of enduring four more years of W. How could the American people have elected this smirking son of privilege, they ask incredulously? Extremist preachers are turning our richly diverse democracy into a narrow-minded theocracy, they cry. We can't live in a country that pushes a deadly war of lies in our names, they say, as they review travel brochures and talk about skedaddling. In the 2 days following the election, The website of the Canadian Immigration Agency had more than 250,000 hits from the U.S. The interest is high enough that an immigration lawyer from Vancouver has scheduled How to Move to Canada seminars in three American cities next month, all in blue states. Come on, folks, get a grip. I understand the impulse, and other lands certainly had their pluses, but this is America, a land of incomparable possibilities. It's our home, our big family, and you don't walk away from something so special just because we've hit an ugly patch. We've had plenty of ugly patches in America's brawling history. Cotton Mather, slavery, Civil War, the suppression of women, the robber barons, Jim Crow, violence against labor, Joe McCarthy. What if progressive forces in these times had just cut and run? Besides, it's not like the entire population has suddenly become right-wing crazed zealots and you're all alone. Remember, 49% of us voted against the Bushites, vehemently opposing where they're trying to take our America. We're strong and getting stronger. This is Jim Hightower saying, Karl Rove would love nothing more than to see all of us move away, leaving America to him. We have no right to do anything like that. It's our happy duty to be in their face and take our country back.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec, nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time. Uh-oh. All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill, and the off-ramp near the Martin Building remains closed, causing major headaches.
Not good.
But I do have good news.
What's that, Kelly?
I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com on our website. We're going to do our NLP class for the week here in just a moment. And we're going to talk today about framing. I'll explain what that is, a little bit more about what NLP is, and we'll get into that in just a minute. First, Martha in Massachusetts has called in, and let's see what's on Martha's mind here. Hey, Martha, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
Well, I just want to let you know that there's a TV show on CNN, Anderson Cooper 360.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole week he's doing conspiracy theories.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, and Friday it says it's about the 2004 election.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah, I mean, very interesting to see how all that gets spun. Somebody sent me an email this morning saying that he had Jerry Falwell on last night, and Jerry Falwell said, in 6,000 years of biblical history, marriage has always been between a woman and a man. And nobody corrected him by saying that it, actually in 6,000 years of biblical history, marriage has always been between a man and several women. And in fact, it's only, I mean, it's still, there are still people who cite the Bible, the Mormons out in Utah, not all of them, I mean the sects, who cite the Bible as saying that, you know, a man should have several wives. That's what it says in the Bible. So, you
yeah.
know, let's go with the Bible on this. It's,
they had that Mr. Blackwell on last night, too, on MSNBC.
Yeah, I saw him. Yeah, he's Chris Matthews.
And I just want to make a comment that I don't think we can wait until 2006. I think there's going to be too much damage done by then.
I don't disagree with you. It's just sometimes you have to look at the situation and say, you know, what's the best thing we can do? We can certainly do both. We can certainly do both. We can be planning for 2006 and be being proactive about 2004. But as long as the Republicans control both the House and the Senate, the presidency is it's still powerful and important, but it's, you really have to have at least one House of Congress if you really want to get anything significant done. Otherwise, you're just beating your head against the wall all the time. But we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out, Martha. And thanks for the call. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Let's get to NLP. Neuro-linguistic programming is really just a set of understandings of how effective communicators communicate. It came out of the research that John Grinder and Richard Bandler did back in the late 1960s and early 1970s, looking at the behavior patterns of people who were truly, startlingly, amazingly effective communicators who produced change in other people through their communication. People like Fritz Perls, who started Gestalt therapy, who founded Gestalt therapy. In fact, Richard Bandler sort of half ghost wrote to Perls' autobiography, In and Out of the Garbage Pail, and one of his books on Gestalt therapy. Fritz Perls, Virginia Satir, the child and family therapist, Milton Erickson, probably the most famous medical hypnotist in history. There have been so many books written about Milton Erickson. He never wrote anything himself, to the best of my knowledge. But Sidney Rosen's book, My Voice Will Go With You, Jay Haley's books on Milton Erickson, Milton Rossi, who recorded a number of hundreds of hours of tape of Erickson doing work and wrote a book about it. So anyhow, what they did was they studied these folks and they said, what are these people doing that produces change that they think is some unique thing that is actually something that we can model? Because one of the presuppositions of NLP is that genius is simply a collection of behaviors that you can model and replicate. So the question was, how do you replicate this? What is the structure of genius? What is the structure of communication? What is the structure of persuasion? What is how are these things organized? This led to the first two books on NLP that were written by Bandler and Grinder. One was titled Frogs into Princes. It was about transformation. And the other was called The Structure of Magic. NLP, or communication, of course, being the magic. So one of the most important and seminal concepts of NLP is called framing. And framing starts out with the assumption that we all view the world or hear the stories of the world or have a sense or carry a feeling about the world and all the issues in the world, in our world, through preconceived frames. And in fact, this is not just like an interesting thing or an idiosyncratic thing or a sometimes thing. This is an always thing, and it's a necessary thing. Frames are necessary in order to help us understand and place significance in things. We require frames in order to be able to understand complexity in a simple way. So we have frames like my family. It's a two-word phrase that encompasses something different for everybody, but it has a very specific meaning. My country, a frame. Patriotism, a frame. These are words that immediately evoke significance or meaning. In marketing, this is often referred to as packaging or branding. In psychology, it would simply be called a way of framing things. In fact, I remember in debate class when I was in high school, our debate instructor would talk about framing your arguments. You know, how do you frame your argument? What is the position that you're standing on? What is the take that you have? What is the construction of your frame? Because once you've defined the frame, then you've colored or tinted or changed the meaning of everything that's contained in that frame. And you get to define it. You get to control it. George Lakoff wrote a great book on framing. It's called Don't Think of an Elephant. And the subtitle is Know Your Values and Frame the Debate. It, along with a DVD that George Lakoff has, in which he discusses these issues and talks about how to do this, is the BuzzFlash Premium for the month. I think it's expiring today or tomorrow. And every month for BuzzFlash, I write a book review. It's called the Tom Hartman's Independent Thinker Book of the Month. And the Independent Thinker Book of the Month for the month of November, and let's see, 30 November, yeah, today's the last day, is this Lakoff book and DVD. Tomorrow or Thursday, we're going to shift to the book for next month, which will be Wealth in Our Commonwealth by Bill Gates Sr. and Chuck Collins. But that's another topic. And so anyhow, Lakoff starts out with the idea that by simply saying a few words, you can cause another person, you can essentially take control of another person's brain. If I say to you, don't think of an elephant, how do you know not to think of an elephant? You have to think of an elephant to know not to think of it. So by saying, okay, I don't want you to think about a blue elephant. Now it's even more complex. Right. And still, in order to know what not to think about, you have to think about it. And so that's like establishing the frame here is about what not to think about, but the frame really, the meaning within it is the elephant. So there are a lot of frames that are used for political talk. In fact, all politics, every political issue ultimately always comes down to a frame. And historically, politicians and political theoreticians have thought that the frame should be the most accurate possible descriptor or description of the issue. In other words, the content is the meaning. And in the past 20 years or so, the perception of this has changed, and it's changed in part because of things like NLP and its pervasive influence in marketing. And by virtue of the fact of the involvement of people who are familiar with NLP, like Lee Atwater and Karl Rove and Frank Luntz. And if not specifically familiar with NLP, broadly familiar with NLP, specifically familiar with many of the specific precepts of it. And what they've come along and said is it doesn't so much matter. In fact, here's the NLP presupposition that defines all this. And this is the real understanding of it. The NLP presupposition, there's a 16 basic, it varies actually depending on whose books you're reading, but there's a bunch of presuppositions of NLP. We've talked about, there's been one for each one of these lessons. The one for this lesson is, the map is not the territory. In other words, our internal representation of the world is not the world. It's only an impoverished representation. We can't understand the world around us. We can't see everything. We can't know everything. We can't understand everything. We can't hear everything. We can't feel everything. So we create a map of the world, and that's our internal representation. And the reality is that most people in most situations think that the map is the territory without realizing that they're just looking at a map. The map is the frame. So with what the conservatives have done with this, for example, take the inheritance tax. For a long, long time in the United States, I mean, for 200 years in the United States, going back to Thomas Jefferson writing about how there should be a tax on accumulated wealth, because if wealth exceeded some unknown but probably easily defined threshold, and that was passed down from family to family, you would end up with a new aristocracy, a new hereditary aristocracy in the United States, and that's anti-democratic, that's aristocratic. Jefferson was very explicit about this, as were virtually all the founders. And this is why none of the founders left foundations or fortunes. These guys were not the billionaires that some conservatives and liberals, for that matter, would have you think. And, in fact, most of them were living pretty close to the edge around the time of the Revolutionary period anyway. So, anyhow, we had this inheritance tax on and off through the 19th century, and then flipped on in 1913, might have been 1916, and we've had it ever since. And it's historically been called the estate tax or the inheritance tax. And the idea is, as Jefferson pointed out, every generation should begin anew. Now, it's okay to pass down some money, but we don't want to create a permanent overclass in America simply because some one person accumulated an enormous amount of money, that would not be healthy for democracy. And so honest, and this isn't to take away family farms. This is to stop the rise of Rockefeller family dynasties kind of things. And or Kennedy family dynasties or Bush family dynasties. And so we've had this tax. And so Frank Luntz came along and said, you know, 70% of Americans support an inheritance tax or an estate tax. But when you call it a death tax, suddenly, you know, everybody dies. Not everybody has an inheritance or an estate, but everybody dies. Suddenly, only 30% of Americans support it. So let's just change the name, and us rich guys won't get taxed. Wouldn't that be cool? And it's worked. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour, my name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. I don't want all my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment and referral at 1-800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on the clerical error.
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
Thank you.
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. We're gonna take a break from the NLP course just for a few minutes here and get a report from Ellen Ratner of the Talk Radio News Service about what's going on in Washington, D.C., keep you up to date and interested and informed, and then we will continue with our lesson on neurolinguistic programming and framing, how to take control of a conversation or debate even before it has started. But first, Ellen Ratner's on the line. Hey, Ellen.
Hi. Interesting thing today.
Mm-hmm.
There is a Congressman Jones. He's a Republican from North Carolina. Why am I not surprised? Home of several military type installations. He actually wrote a letter to Secretary of Defense Don Rumsfeld today and asked that the Secretary restrict media coverage of military men and women engaged in direct combat. He said that the presence of camera crews may eventually jeopardize the safety of American troops.
Oh, this is all coming out of the NBC shooting.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, the filming the guy who shot the... Well, you know, it's predictable, it's expected. I'm surprised. Frankly, whoever that NBC cameraman, or that probably the entire crew was, I hope they got them back to the United States in a hurry, because they're walking around with a bullseye on their back.
Right. There are some people that aren't very happy with those guys.
Yeah, and it's got to have a chilling effect on all embedded reporters, frankly.
Well, that's right. But I know that the military is in balance, been very pleased with the with the reporting from the embedded reporters.
Yeah.
Okay, a couple other interesting things going on, and that is my brother is in Germany as we speak. And I don't know if you saw the front page of the Wall Street Journal today, but they are asking the German prosecutor to open up a war crimes citing for several of the top brass in the U.S. military.
Whoa! I looked at the front page of the Wall Street Journal and I completely missed that. That's remarkable. Your brother's a lawyer, as I recall. In fact, he's
president of the Center for Constitutional Rights.
Right. Yeah. He's been on this program.
He wrote that book on Guantanamo, and he's the one that, even though he didn't argue the case, they brought that case eventually won in the U.S. court.
That's right. We had him on the show about that about 6 months ago. And in fact, I said, "Do you have a sister named Ellen?" He goes, "Yes, and I'm very proud of her." So, I don't know if that story never got back to you. Now you know.
No.
Anyhow, he can give you a great plug on the air. So tell us exactly what he is doing over there and what.
Well,
who is the
German laws, because of after Nuremberg and all that, essentially say that if you have war crimes, it doesn't matter whether Germany's in war with you or not. But if you participate in war crimes, then they can, in fact, get you for war crimes violations. Mm-hmm. And so they went to Germany, and they are asking the German government to prosecute. Now, the German government probably is not going to, because they're going to get pressure. Remember that case against Sharon that happened in Belgium, and essentially the U.S. said, hey, you continue to pursue this, and we're going to pull out of NATO.
Well, not only that, Belgium actually changed their law in response to the U.S. pressure. Not only did they drop the lawsuit, but they actually, their legislature changed their laws.
It's going to be much harder to change the law in Germany.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. Now, do they have a German organization or German citizens
who have
standing?
Yeah, they have several German organizations. I don't know whether it's just Green Party people or whatever, but this is, you know, obviously it was in front page of the Wall Street Journal. It's going to get some press, and there are going to be people in the United States Congress and in the White House that are going to go nuts about it.
Mm-hmm. And today Bush is in Canada, where last week the Toronto Star was talking about indicting him for war crimes.
Right. That, again, is probably not going to happen. The Canadians are not going to, you know, put their relationship with us on that kind of line.
But apparently there's huge demonstrations. We talked with two Canadians today. One called into the show who's a listener, and the other was a guest that we had on, who everybody's going to either Ottawa or Halifax to protest. It's like a national holiday kind of thing.
Well, I wish I was there.
Yeah. Should be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how it gets reported. Ellen, thanks so much for the report today.
I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Indeed. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, our report from Washington, D.C. for the day. We'll be back with our NLP lesson for today right after this. Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At least two-thirds of the nation's fire departments are understaffed, and police departments are watching the Bush administration phase out Clinton-era community policing programs. New York City has found its fire departments increasingly understaffed, forcing the city to close fire stations. Other cities have wound up temporarily closing stations until new funding can be found. The National Fire Protection Association says that the worst shortages are in rural areas where many departments are having trouble recruiting new volunteers. As for police departments, the Bush administration has said that training and staffing should be a local responsibility and has drastically cut funding. New York City, on average, has lost 1,000 officers per year for the last 3 years.
Unions representing Department of Homeland Security workers are calling for the withdrawal of a secrecy pledge they say would keep whistleblowers from going public with problems within the department. Homeland Security workers are required to abide by a pledge not to disclose unclassified information to the public. John Gage of the American Federation of Government Employees and Colleen Kelly, president of the National Treasury Employees Union, both say that the Department of Homeland Security pledge of secrecy puts unprecedented restrictions on free speech rights of workers. The form that Homeland Security workers are forced to sign also gives the government unprecedented access to workers' homes for searches that the union leaders say violate the constitutional right to be protected from unreasonable searches and seizures. Union lawyers have sent letters to Homeland Security executives. More than 60,000 Homeland Security workers are represented by the two unions.
With their strike entering its sixth day, Pennsylvania Turnpike workers are returning to the negotiation table. Managers and temporary employees have been manning the booths during the walkout, and the Turnpike Commission has been charging a flat $2 fee per car and $15 per commercial vehicle. Members of Teamsters Local 77 and 250, representing more than 2,000 employees, have been working under the conditions of a contract that expired in September of 2003. Negotiations broke down when the commission refused union demands for retroactive pay.
Walmart workers at a store in Loveland, Colorado are headed toward a union organizing effort. United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 7 says this store could be the first in the U.S. Walmart chain to become unionized. 17 workers in a Walmart Tire and Lube Express service center have signed union cards. The workers will get a hearing in Denver before the National Labor Relations Board to certify their petition and set a date for the union election. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The universal health care decried by conservatives in America has given France the best health care system in the world. That's according to the World Health Organization. French workers get both universal care and the right to choose their own doctors. French workers get 85% of their health care costs paid. France has a better infant mortality rate than the U.S. and delivers all this high-quality universal health care for much less. $4,200 per year is what it costs in America. In France, it's $2,200 per person per year. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
So what should these frames be? What are the issues that we should be framing when it comes to politics? Because as I pointed out there, every issue, no matter what it may be, has to have a frame. It has to have some short way of saying it so that all the complexity within it is instantly understood. Another example of how the conservatives have framed, for example, taxes. We talked about the estate tax and the inheritance tax being reframed as the death tax. Similarly, taxes in general, which we used to call tax investments. How are we going to invest our tax monies? Then it became, how are we going to spend our tax monies? Remember, the cons started talking about tax and spend liberals, like spending tax dollars on things like schools and bridges and roads was a bad thing. And taxing people for that was a bad thing. Well, now they went a step beyond that. They said, you know, we don't want to be paying taxes, frankly, and, you know, the wealthy. And so taxes for them, for the wealthy, are a burden. And so we need to relieve people of the burden of taxes. In order to have relief, of course, you have to have something that's a burden, right? Relieve your suffering. Relieve your suffering during the allergy season with Primatene or whatever it is. So there's this whole concept that relief is relief from something. And so as soon as they put the word relief after taxes, then that frame caused millions of Americans, hundreds of millions of Americans, to suddenly think of taxes as something from which people need relief and forget. It created amnesia and forget that taxes are the price of admission to a civil society and that our tax dollars are what we use to invest in our future, in educating our children, in building the infrastructure of our nation so that we can continue to exist as a free and independent country. And that historically, those who have sought to avoid paying taxes have been viewed as criminals or freeloaders. Instead, now they're being celebrated. They're being put on TV and all the programs. You got Grover Norquist and Steve Forbes and all these guys out there going, oh, no, we shouldn't pay taxes. And so much so that the American people are willing to go along with George W. Bush borrowing $8 trillion from our children and our grandchildren, and of course we're going to have to pay some of the interest on it as well, but ultimately the principal is going to be paid by our children and our grandchildren in order to give relief to the very wealthiest of the taxpayers. It's a world turned upside down. So how can we reframe some of these issues? Well, with regard to taxes, of course, we need to be going back to talking about people who don't want to pay taxes are freeloaders, that tax and spend is just fine, but borrow and spend is not. Howard Dean today wrote a great piece. It's on Ubinet.com. I'm assuming it's in other places in the country. He says, I do not believe it is our job to support a philosophy which can be summed up as borrow and spend, borrow and spend. So there you go, framing what the Republicans are up to. Let's look at a few other examples. Our Social Security system historically was referred to as the Social Security insurance system because it is. It's not just for retirement. There are people who draw Social Security because they're disabled. There are people who draw. There's a variety of things contained within Social Security. The program is not a retirement system exclusively. It is an insurance system to keep people from experiencing disasters. That's what insurance is all about, to prevent people from having disasters. And some people retire exclusively on Social Security, and they don't do it very comfortably, but they don't have a disaster. And they're trying to reframe this thing as a retirement system, the Social Security retirement system. It's not. And they're trying to reframe it as a system which is broken and needs to be fixed or changed. And it's not broken. The Social Security Trust Fund right now is showing a huge surplus, a multi-billion dollar surplus. Last year, George Bush borrowed $200 billion from the Social Security Trust Fund to lower the national debt. The actual debt that Bush ran up last year, the actual deficit, rather, that Bush ran up last year, was $200 billion greater than the reported $400 and change billion. It was actually $600 billion and change because he borrowed $200 billion from the Social Security Trust Fund. In fact, previous presidents have borrowed, and this spans Democratic as well as Republican administrations, have borrowed so much from the Social Security Trust Fund that the government, that part of that $8 trillion debt, that $2 trillion of that debt is money that the government owes to its own Social Security Trust Fund. Interesting, eh? So the Social Security Trust Fund has a surplus right now and will until the year 2016 at, you know, based on all the current trends and demographics. And in the year 2016, it will actually have to start spending some of its trust fund because it will be bringing in less money than it's paying out as the baby boomers retire. And that will continue until the year 2049. In the year 2049, the Social Security Trust Fund will have spent all of the surplus that it has accumulated over the last 70 years. And we'll have to start paying out with current dollars. And at the current rate of taxation, they'd only be able to pay about two-thirds of the benefits that they're paying right now. And this is adjusted for inflation and everything. The simple solution, right now, if you earn $100,000 a year, you only pay Social Security taxes on the first $87,000. After that $87,000, you don't pay any Social Security tax. You don't pay any FICA. This is wrong. This is a regressive tax. This is a tax that hits all of the working poor, all of the middle class, and doesn't hit people who make $1 million a year. You make $1 million a year, you only pay Social Security tax on the first $79,000. That's wrong. Everybody should be paying Social Security tax. If we simply eliminated the cap on Social Security tax, I mean, if you want to fix the system so that there's going to be no shortfalls in the year 2049, just raise that cap from $79,000, $78,000 up to about $100,000, $110,000. And the problem is fixed forever. But if you took the cap off altogether so that the Walton family had to pay into the Social Security Trust Fund, or if, you know, God forbid, you were even to say, hey, those people who make their living sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive, dividend income and interest income, you also have to pay a Social Security tax on. Then you could actually turn the Social Security program into a program where people would have very healthy, you know, very comfortable retirement if they needed it. Instead, of course, the cons want to privatize it. They want to hand it over to Wall Street. They did this in England. And right now, about 5% of all the money that goes through the British pension system, the British Social Security system, which is in the middle of a huge scandal right now, by the way, about 5% sticks to the fingers of the corporations that administer it. Here in the United States, cost of administration of Social Security, less than 1%. Why? Because it's government bureaucrats doing it. They don't get huge salaries. They don't fly around in private jets. They don't have huge buildings. They don't have big advertising campaigns. They don't have multi-million dollar CEOs. They don't have to pay dividends to their stockholders. They just do their job, administering Social Security. So we need to reframe this and go back to calling it the Social Security Insurance System and make it very clear to people that the Social Security system is not broken. It does not need to be fixed. Sometime in the next 30 years, 30 to 35 years, sometime in the next 30 to 35 years, we should raise the cap on the amount of income that gets taxed for Social Security so that we can continue to provide for people after the year 2049 at current rates. That's all. It's very simple, very straightforward. Okay, let's move on from Social Security. Morality and the culture wars. The cons have succeeded in projecting the frame that morality means whether it has to do with gay sex and abortion. They've absolutely succeeded in defining this two-issue frame. And it's really important for us to start talking aggressively in public about to expand the frame of the word morality and start talking about the immorality of widespread poverty. That we support a culture of life. This is another frame that the cons use. That we support a culture of life, and therefore we are working to end war. We're working to end the death penalty, and we're working to end premature death from lack of health care and malnutrition. 13 million people in the United States have food insecurity. That is to say, they literally go hungry. This is a moral issue. 45 million people in the United States have no health insurance. And many of them are dying early. An estimated 20 to 40,000 people in the United States die prematurely because they don't have access to the kind of health care that would provide them with preventative screening. This is a moral issue. We need to work to eliminate unnecessary abortions. Now, this is an interesting frame. When you say eliminate unnecessary abortions, it's like saying don't think of a blue elephant, because as soon as you say unnecessary abortions, the person has to assume that there may be times when there are necessary abortions. And the reality is that there are times when there are necessary abortions, particularly if a fetus is malformed or, you know, going to term, it's going to kill the mother, which does happen occasionally. And then there's the larger span of this. But working to eliminate unnecessary abortions through adoption incentives, contraceptive education, and increasing the economic status of the working poor, all of these things reduce abortion rates. What we saw was during the Clinton administration, abortion rates went down. During the Bush administration, abortion rates have gone up. Why? Because we have reduced education about contraception. We've reduced the availability of contraception. And we have seen the economic status of a large swath of America decline. And all of those things lead to more unwanted, generally teenage pregnancies. And thus more unnecessary abortions. They were unnecessary because those people shouldn't have gotten pregnant in the first place. Let's promote that frame. Another morality frame is the right of all adult Americans to have legal protection for committed long-term relationships. Whether you call it marriage or civil unions, I don't care. But every American who is an adult and is in a committed long-term relationship should have the legal right to inherit from their partner, to visit their partner in the hospital, to have community property with their partner, to share insurance benefits, they should have that right. This is a civil right. Let's reframe it as such. When it comes to working, let's look at the frame, the conservative war on working people. From Ronald Reagan's union busting of PATCO to W's privatization of unionized government jobs, to rewriting overtime laws, to changing the tax code so people who earn their living by sitting by the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive in the mail and then pay lower or no tax rate than somebody who works by the sweat of his brow or the energy of his mind. In all of these ways, the conservatives are waging war on the working people of America. This is a frame that I would love to see progressives, liberals, and Democrats start using. The war on working people. The conservative war on working people. And if that phrase is used often enough, that ever since Reagan declared war on the working people of America, with his anti-union agenda, anti-overtime law, and now George W. Bush rewriting the overtime laws, changing the tax code so that working people pay higher tax rates, higher income tax rates than do people who earn their living by waiting for the dividend check to arrive. This is the war on working people in America. And the cons are doing this so successfully. And whenever anybody brings it up, they say, oh, that's class warfare. Yes, and they declared it. And their class has been winning. It's time for us to take that back. The war against America by pirate multinational corporations. Here's another frame for you. Let's call corporations like Halliburton that create offshore subsidiaries so that they don't have to pay taxes, even when most of their business comes from American taxpayer dollars. Let's call them pirates. They have decided to be corporations without a nation, just like pirates are people without a nation. They don't fly the British flag or the French flag or the American flag. They fly the pirate flag. Pirate multinational corporations who are taking control of the World Trade Organization and NAFTA They have the power to force America to strike from our law books any laws or citizens' initiatives we passed in a democratic fashion that they don't like. This is wrong. We shouldn't have given pirates this kind of power over us. Bill Clinton made a mistake. Yes, 60% of the Democrats voted against him, but the 40 who voted with him and all those Republicans, it was a big mistake. We need to roll back the pirate initiatives of NAFTA and the WTO, the GATT, the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trades, and not promote CAFTA, another pirate initiative. Free traders? No, they're pirates. Another frame, the conservative war against public education. The No Child Left Behind Act, part of the conservative war against public education. Very, very straightforward. Let's start redefining the frames. It's the Tom Hartman Program, the real free speech zone. Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartman Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level, and you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
For thousands of years, millions of people have trusted the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
A new report says the Arctic is warming faster than previously thought, and the entire world will feel the heat. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the planet, according to a 4-year study by hundreds of scientists. The Arctic Climate Impact Assessment represents the work of experts from the United States, Canada, and 6 other countries. Susan Hassel authored the final report, and she says its findings should concern everyone.
Arctic climate is warming rapidly now. This is not a future problem, it's a now problem. And much larger changes are projected. And these changes have enormous impacts, not only in the Arctic region, but on the entire world. Because these changes in the Arctic will amplify the global warming. and make the rest of the world warmer. These changes will also raise sea levels around the world.
Hassell says at least half of the summer sea ice in the Arctic will melt by the end of the century. She says that will lead to an accelerating pattern of warming because the retreating ice exposes more open water that can absorb still more solar energy. The report blames the warming trend on carbon dioxide from the burning of fossil fuels. Hassell says a continued warming trend could raise sea levels by several feet in the next few centuries, especially as ice that sits on land continues to melt.
We also know that glaciers all around the Arctic are melting and already contributing to sea level rise. The glaciers of Alaska, for example, have been melting very dramatically for 3 or 4 decades and speeding up in recent decades. We also know that the melting on the surface of the Greenland ice sheet around the edges, especially in summer, is increasing. It's increased by about 16% in recent decades.
The Arctic Climate Impact Assessment Group will soon release a set of recommended policies to fight global climate change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. Here's some quick frames for you. The environment. The cons have tried to frame this as we must balance environmental and economic needs. No, we need to define the environment as what keeps us alive. Provides the oxygen we breathe and the clean water and food we drink and eat. When we allow corporate interests to despoil it for profit, we drive up cancer and other disease rates and endanger the delicate balance of life that keeps the world safe. Parks and wild places. We should reframe these from resources to manage to these are the wild lands that were held in trust for us by previous generations that we must hold in trust for future generations. Energy policy. We need to reframe this away from energy for jobs and to maintain our lifestyle and into exciting new technologies that will cut our addiction to Middle East oil and make America energy independent while fueling an explosion of jobs here at home. And on it goes. I have a few other frames I'll share with you in the next hour of the program. And as we go along, of course, throughout time, but framing is just this absolutely key element. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Gene in Oregon on the line. Hey Gene, welcome to the program.
Hi Tom. A couple of things. I'll do the easier one first. I've been kind of looking at these tax cuts for the corporations is corporate welfare.
It is, yes, absolutely. And then there's overt corporate welfare, over $150 billion a year that's actually given to corporations, not cut from their taxes, but actually written, checks written to them. It's things like subsidies for oil and tobacco and on it goes. Whereas we only spend $42 billion a year on human welfare.
The other thing of it is, and this may be a little more controversial, you just said pirate corporations or something along those lines. I might go so far as to call them more like terrorists in the sense that they work outside government. They're in it more for themselves as opposed to.
I don't think that would fly, Gene, because the terrorist frame has already been taken.
Well,
and it's well established. But the pirate frame is available. And I think it's a good one. I think it's a good way to describe these multinational corporations that have loyalty to nobody except themselves. That was what the pirates were all about.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to comment.
Okay. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you, and thanks for listening and for calling in. Just a couple of others real quickly. Health care. Cons want to do health savings accounts. Let's say health care is a basic human right, not something that should be owned by the rich conservative elite corporations and doled out to us when we can afford it. No, it's a basic human right. Reframing religion and government. This is a big one. We want to keep religion from being contaminated by government. Another important frame. Lots of things to frame.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At least two-thirds of the nation's fire departments are understaffed, and police departments are watching the Bush administration phase out Clinton-era community policing programs. New York City has found its fire departments increasingly understaffed, forcing the city to close fire stations. Other cities have wound up temporarily closing stations until new funding can be found. The National Fire Protection Association says that the worst shortages are in rural areas where many departments are having trouble recruiting new volunteers. As for police departments, the Bush administration has said that training and staffing should be a local responsibility and has drastically cut funding. New York City, on average, has lost 1,000 officers per year for the last 3 years.
Unions representing Department of Homeland Security workers are calling for the withdrawal of a secrecy pledge they say would keep whistleblowers from going public with problems within the department. Homeland Security workers are required to abide by a pledge not to disclose unclassified information to the public. John Gage of the American Federation of Government Employees and Colleen Kelly, president of the National Treasury Employees Union, both say that the Department of Homeland Security pledge of secrecy puts unprecedented restrictions on free speech rights of workers. The form that Homeland Security workers are forced to sign also gives the government unprecedented access to workers' homes for searches that the union leaders say violate the constitutional right to be protected from unreasonable searches and seizures. Union lawyers have sent letters to Homeland Security executives. More than 60,000 Homeland Security workers are represented by the two unions.
With their strike entering its sixth day, Pennsylvania Turnpike workers are returning to the negotiation table. Managers and temporary employees have been manning the booths during the walkout, and the Turnpike Commission has been charging a flat $2 fee per car and $15 per commercial vehicle. Members of Teamsters Local 77 and 250, representing more than 2,000 employees, have been working under the conditions of a contract that expired in September of 2003. Negotiations broke down when the commission refused union demands for retroactive pay.
Walmart workers at a store in Loveland, Colorado, are headed toward a union organizing effort. United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 7 says this store could be the first in the U.S. Walmart chain to become unionized. 17 workers in a Walmart Tire and Lube Express service center have signed union cards. The workers will get a hearing in Denver before the National Labor Relations Board to certify their petition and set a date for the union election. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The universal health care decried by conservatives in America has given France the best health care system in the world. That's according to the World Health Organization. French workers get both universal care and the right to choose their own doctors. French workers get 85% of their health care costs paid. France has a better infant mortality rate than the U.S. and delivers all this high-quality universal health care for much less. $4,200 per year is what it costs in America. In France, it's $2,200 per person per year. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Talk about bitter irony. George W. wrapped himself in the flag and campaigned under a political theme of support our troops. Yet, even as he campaigned, troops in Iraq continued to die precisely because he has failed shamefully to support them. All the political rah-rah stuff in the world won't stop roadside bombs and other blasts. For the deadly reality of war, our troops need the best protective armor and equipment there is. But even now, their commander-in-chief continues to short them, especially the National Guard and reservists who are doing much of the most dangerous work in Iraq. For months, entire units have gone begging for the most basic steel plates needed to armor their Humvees against the deadly blasts they encounter daily. Families of soldiers have offered to buy these steel plates themselves, but have been rejected by commanders who keep promising that the Army will provide better equipment soon. Soon never seems to come, and soldiers literally are reduced to scavenging scrap pieces of sheet metal and sandbags to provide some makeshift protection, though this has not stopped the deaths and maimings. The Bushites loudly contend that they have spared no expense to outfit the troops, but the soldiers, their families, and the daily body counts say otherwise. In fact, while the Pentagon has said that it plans to retrofit some 4,400 trucks in Iraq with armor kits, it had provided only about 800 of the kits by mid-September. As the mother of one National Guardsman put it, if we're one of the richest nations in the world, our soldiers shouldn't be sent out looking like the Beverly Hillbillies. The Pentagon now says it hopes to have all Humvees armored by next April, a full year and more than 1,000 deaths after Bush launched his poorly prepared war. This is Jim Hightower saying, to demand that Washington support our troops with more than political rhetoric, call Operation Truth, 212-982-9699.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the program, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, with archives at whiterosesociety.org. and TomHartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, go to TomHartman.com. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics, high technology for low prices. 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888-ECO-WINE. Here's an interesting juxtaposition that kind of lays out what's going on with the conservative economic policies. We know now, of course, that over the last 100 years, more or less 100 years, not more or less the fact, at least over the last 100 years, when Republican administrations are in power, the stock market doesn't go up as rapidly as it does when Democrats are in power in the White House. Absolutely consistent, no exceptions. And when Republicans are in power, the average wage of average working people tends to erode, whereas when Democrats are in power, it increases. Now, there is an exception to that in Eisenhower's administration. During Eisenhower's administration, however, it rose more slowly than it did during the Democratic administrations that preceded and followed it.
And now, again, we see more evidence of the consequences of conservative economics, so-called voodoo economics, or so-called supply-side economics. And new filings, this from foreclosures.com is a website that tracks foreclosures. They say that they're doing it so that they can put investors in touch with people who are having problems so they can help those people out. All right, in other words, they're selling information to the lenders. And, you know, without putting a moral spin on this, let's just look at the information that they've compiled. This from the Sacramento, California Business Wire. New filings of foreclosures increased by 31% in the first 18 days of November over the total of new cases filed in the previous month. This in the Chicago area. They do this by region. They look at the Chicago, Illinois, the state of New Jersey, metro areas of Phoenix, Las Vegas, New York, and 18 California counties. And in the Chicago area, foreclosures up 31% November over September. Now, why have the foreclosures gone up so much in Chicago? And might this be a national trend? Well, they say that it's because of two things. One, that the housing market prior to now had been overheated. They pointed out, for example, in Las Vegas, there was a 52% increase in housing values in a year. Now, that's beyond the 3% rate of inflation, so it kind of qualifies as what you might call a bubble. But they point out that that's not the only problem. This isn't just a bursting bubble, because in Chicago, the third quarter of 2004, housing prices increased just 7.6%. Now, 7.6% for a quarter, let's see, that's 28, 29, almost 30% for the year. That's still way above the rate of inflation. But housing costs historically rise faster than the rate of inflation because, as Will Rogers said, he said, "My daddy told me buy land, they ain't making no more of it." And as population increases, the ratio of the amount of available land to the number of people who want it steadily changes in favor of the value of land. So land and real estate always over time are a good investment, by and large. Particularly if you can earn rental income from it. We all know that. We all played Monopoly as kids, right? But in any case, in Chicago, prices rising only 7.6%. But now it's starting to change. And the reason it's starting to change is because Greenspan had been furiously trying to prop up his friends. Greenspan, of course, being a longtime hardcore conservative. And a rather partisan one at that, although he claims to be nonpartisan. And during the Clinton administration, he was maintaining relatively high interest rates. During the Bush administration, he had to drop them down to what are, in effect, negative interest rates. Negative interest rates, where the government is essentially giving away money to the banks because the interest rate was below the inflation rate. So simply by borrowing money from the Fed at the federal funds rate of 1% per year, and just, you know, sitting on that money, a bank, in effect, could make a profit. They didn't. That's not how it works. But it's still regarded in financial circles. When the interest rate is below the inflation rate, it's called a negative interest rate. And the situation here is that housing prices are not based on the actual value of the property. To a large extent, they're based on how much the monthly payments are. Now, this is a significant difference from how housing prices were calculated before the 1920s. Before the 1920s, for the first 150 years, more or less, of this country, nobody borrowed money to buy a home. Just wasn't done. Consumer credit came into its own in the 1920s as a result of the activities of the RCA Corporation. The RCA Corporation came into being to manufacture radios. Radio was really hot in the 1920s. It was the internet of its time. And RCA pioneered this this business plan. There were stores that sprung up, radio stores that sprung up all across America, just like the computer stores did in the 80s, radio stores. And RCA started offering customers the opportunity to buy a radio and pay it off over the course of a year, 12 monthly payments instead of one. And that was the beginning of consumer credit in the United States. Before that, there were no credit cards, and people didn't borrow to buy their homes unless they did it within their families. They just rented, and they saved and saved and saved until they could buy a house. And there were some people who got mortgages. Certainly, we did have mortgages. Banks were lending out money. But it was just very rare. And with the credit consumer credit boom, the housing mortgages started to pick up. But then it really picked up after World War II, because part of the GI Bill included, or part of the program, the whole, you know, let's help the returning vets who so many of whom died, actually, and so many of whom returned physically and psychologically scarred from World War II. Let's help them into the middle class. Let's help them, you know, raise families. So you had the GI Bill. You had this program to provide people with education, and you also had subsidies of mortgage interest rates. In other words, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, the early incarnations of these things, of these government programs that would make it easier for people to borrow money from a bank. In other words, the federal government would insure the mortgages. And so people who previously didn't qualify to borrow money from a bank now could. And this brought about the explosion in home mortgages. And the consequence of that is that now the vast majority of people don't actually live in a home that they've paid off. So they don't technically own their home. The bank technically owns their home. They just have the privilege of paying property taxes on it and keeping it up. And the bank can take it back pretty much anytime it wants. The fine print in the mortgage contracts was changed in the late 70s, early 80s, the last time there was an interest rate spike and a big wave of bankruptcies. So the bank now, if they see flags on your credit report or if they just are in trouble, they can call your mortgage. They can say, you got to pay the whole thing tomorrow morning. Or sometimes it's in 30 days or whatever. But anyhow, the bottom line here is that most people don't think, when they look at a house, they're not thinking, gee, is this house $150,000 or is it $160,000? They're thinking, are the monthly payments going to be $510 or $612? And they buy the house based on how much they can afford to pay every month. Well, when interest rates are super low, as they have been for the last 3.5 years, you can buy a lot more house for the same monthly payments. But interest rates now are going up. They have to. Greenspan had been holding them down to try and keep the economy together so it would look good for George W. Bush so he would get reelected. This is all about payback. Bush got elected, and the damage that was done to the economy by these very, very low interest rates is going to come back to haunt us all. It allowed the government, it allowed Bush to borrow mind-boggling quantities of money, trillions and trillions of dollars, to finance the government activity. The amount of money that we spent on the national debt last year, I'd have to go back and look at the numbers. My recollection was it was $360 billion, but I could be off. I believe it was in that neighborhood. It would have been half again larger if interest rates were where they were during the Clinton time. So, which would have meant that there would have had been cuts elsewhere or more borrowing. So what happens is as the interest rates go up, the squeeze is going to be on government programs. You're going to see less money for schools, less money for education, less money for Medicare, more calls for cuts in Social Security, more cuts in aid to states, more cuts in programs for poor people who can't afford to heat their houses, and on and on and on it goes. Roads not being maintained, bridges not being rebuilt, the infrastructure of America continuing to deteriorate. Because the money's not there. It has to be paid in interest to those people who hold the treasury bills, which is mostly China and U.S. banks and Saudis and people in the Middle East. And the other thing is, as interest rates go up, as they are doing, more and more people will say, I can't afford this house anymore. or, you know, the when the payments go from $500 to $550 to $600 to $650 to $700 a month, as the interest rates go from 4% to 5% to 6% to 7% to 8%, or maybe even up to the 16, 17, 18% that we saw in the late 70s, the last time this cycle came around. You know, when Nixon tried his borrow and spend stuff with the Vietnam War, and LBJ, for that matter. If we come back around to this again, then you're going to see an explosion of people simply saying, you know, the house isn't worth what I owe on it. Why am I continuing to make these payments to the bank? Because the housing values drop because the monthly payments have gone up. And so people can't afford so much house anymore. So you have deflation in the housing market, or the bursting of the housing market bubble. It is already beginning to happen. Talk to any real estate agent. Talk to any mortgage banker. They are scared to death. News stories in the business pages of the business press about concerns about Fannie Mae, which buys mortgages and holds billions of dollars in mortgages in the secondary market, where people, you know, banks buy and sell mortgages. So here's the interesting juxtaposition. Chicagoland foreclosures jump 31%. At the same time, ExxonMobil has set aside $184 million to give $25.5 million in bonuses, $25.2 million in bonuses, to its executives. So the CEOs are making more. Everybody else is out of a house. 20 after.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
No, no, you may not hang at the park. Yes, even if all your friends are there. Go to Mrs. Feldman's till I'm home from work.
Keeping tabs on your kid after school isn't easy.
Yes, tomorrow too.
But if you don't, she's more likely to do drugs.
No, I am not easier on your brother.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for Drug-Free America.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All of the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242-8272. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, TomHartman.com, the website. Chat room rolling along. Is Rama the world's condom? I'm not even going to touch that one. I'm sorry. Instead, let's play a little tape. I was at the barber shop the other day. This courtesy of Firesign Theater. Visiting the barber shop and...
Hi, Harry.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Bergerman. What'll it be?
Just a trim today, Harry.
Oh, I got a special going. Haircut, shave, and a sigmoidoscopy for $50.
You're turning this barbershop into a hospital?
Well, what with the county closing down all the clinics due to budget cuts, there's a whole lot of equipment flooding the market and nobody de- Hey, Clyde!
What?
Keep away from those defibrillator paddles. That ain't a video game.
But I'm winning! Ow!
Oh. Hey, can we get back to cutting my hair here?
Oh, sure. You know, I'm thinking about it.
Yes. Just an average day in the barber shop. It's with the county hospital closing. Now, actually, Bill Frist's family will buy it out, make it for profit, and make another few billion off it. It's just, you know, it's the way they do it. After a year of record earnings, ExxonMobil said in a regulatory filing that it would reward its 17 executive officers with more than $25 million in bonuses. This was in an 8K filing with the SEC. CBS MarketWatch Lisa Sanders reports, the company's compensation committee said it established a $184 million ceiling for its 2004 short-term incentive program. A total of $25.2 million in bonuses were given to the executives. The committee also set a ceiling of 13 million shares to be awarded as restricted stock or restricted stock units under the company's 2003 incentive program. The 17 executives shared in 1.67 million shares, according to the filings. Now, okay, so they split up 1.6 million shares, and the share value today is $51.37. So that's about 56, well, it's a little more than that. It's almost $60 million worth of stock, plus $25 million in cash. These people must work really hard. You know, how is it if somebody's making the equivalent of $20,000-$30,000 an hour, they must be working like at light speed. I mean, it must be impossible to see their hands move. They're just going so fast. Or they must just be like so much more brilliant than a rocket scientist or a brain surgeon. Must be something, isn't it? I mean, you know, how else can you justify somebody earning a $20 million bonus or a $20 million salary, for that matter? Are you trying to tell me that they're really 20,000 times smarter than somebody who only makes $20,000 or $10,000 a year? Or 10,000 times smarter than somebody who makes 20,000, or 5,000 times smarter than somebody who makes 40,000. I don't think so. Yeah, they might be smart. Say they're twice as smart as the average. Well, then let's pay them 80,000 instead of 40,000, or 160 instead of 80. But 20 million a year? No, it's not that they're smarter. It's not that they're working faster.
What it is that the United States has become a kleptocracy. I mean, in the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, even the early 80s, until Reagan came along and changed the standard paradigm, typical CEOs made 20, 30, at the most 40 times what their employees make. Now they make on average 450 times what their employees make. Are they working 450 times harder? I don't think so. But it's there and they can steal it. And what we are seeing is a culture that is being promoted from the top down of greed, of exploitation, of if it's there, steal it. Well, shouldn't some of it go to the workers, the people who actually produced the value and made the products and do the service that the company earned that profit on? No, come on. The workers, that's a different class of people. Now, this is class warfare, my friends. This is the most ugly kind of class warfare. And it is being waged today in the United States against you and me. It's a sad day. We must speak out. 29 minutes past the hour.
Do you have a child with ADHD who is misunderstood, unhappy, and dissatisfied with school? Are you ready for an educational change and for your child to like school again? Consider The Hunter School, a residential K-8 school specializing in the education of children with ADHD, hunters in a farmer's world. Hunter School appreciates and honors the uniqueness of each student while building upon his inherent strengths and abilities. For more information, find us on the web at hunterschool.org.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
At least two-thirds of the nation's fire departments are understaffed, and police departments are watching the Bush administration phase out Clinton-era community policing programs. New York City has found its fire departments increasingly understaffed, forcing the city to close fire stations. Other cities have wound up temporarily closing stations until new funding can be found. The National Fire Protection Association says that the worst shortages are in rural areas where many departments are having trouble recruiting new volunteers. As for police departments, the Bush administration has said that training and staffing should be a local responsibility and has drastically cut funding. New York City, on average, has lost 1,000 officers per year for the last 3 years.
Unions representing Department of Homeland Security workers are calling for the withdrawal of a secrecy pledge they say would keep whistleblowers from going public with problems within the department. Homeland Security workers are required to abide by a pledge not to disclose unclassified information to the public. John Gage of the American Federation of Government Employees and Colleen Kelly, president of the National Treasury Employees Union, both say that the Department of Homeland Security pledge of secrecy puts unprecedented restrictions on free speech rights of workers. The form that Homeland Security workers are forced to sign also gives the government unprecedented access to workers' homes for searches that the union leaders say violate the constitutional right to be protected from unreasonable searches and seizures. Union lawyers have sent letters to Homeland Security executives. More than 60,000 Homeland Security workers are represented by the two unions.
With their strike entering its sixth day, Pennsylvania Turnpike workers are returning to the negotiation table. Managers and temporary employees have been manning the booths during the walkout, and the Turnpike Commission has been charging a flat $2 fee per car and $15 per commercial vehicle. Members of Teamsters Local 77 and 250, representing more than 2,000 employees, have been working under the conditions of a contract that expired in September of 2003. Negotiations broke down when the commission refused union demands for retroactive pay.
Walmart workers at a store in Loveland, Colorado are headed toward a union organizing effort. United Food and Commercial Workers Union Local 7 says this store could be the first in the U.S. Walmart chain to become unionized. 17 workers in a Walmart Tire and Lube Express service center have signed union cards. The workers will get a hearing in Denver before the National Labor Relations Board to certify their petition and set a date for the union election. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The universal health care decried by conservatives in America has given France the best health care system in the world. That's according to the World Health Organization. French workers get both universal care and the right to choose their own doctors. French workers get 85% of their health care costs paid. France has a better infant mortality rate than the U.S. and delivers all this high-quality universal health care for much less. $4,200 per year is what it costs in America. In France, it's $2,200 per person per year. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It was a slow day, and the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road. Now there was a bright light, a shattering of shop windows. The bomb in the baby carriage was wired to the radio.
Oh, so sad. Welcome back. 26 and a half minutes, 27 and a half minutes before the hour. Let's acknowledge somebody good. It's time for our Caught You Doing Something Right award. This is just a good thing, I think. Yes, we caught you doing something. It's better to catch people doing things right than catching them doing wrong. Hyperion. Hyperion Solutions Corporation of Sunnyvale, California. We caught you doing something right. What are they doing right? They are giving $5,000 to every employee who buys a hybrid car that gets at least 45 miles per gallon, or any car that gets at least 45 miles per gallon. And this is from Godfrey Sullivan, the CEO of the company. He says, one of the most important steps an individual can take to improve the quality of our air is to drive a vehicle that goes further on a gallon or liter of gas. One of the most important steps that a company can take is to help them. And 45 mile per gallon standard, which is roughly 5.3 liters per 100 kilometers. Good stuff. Good thing. And we caught you doing something right. Congratulations. This was written up in the Silicon Valley San Jose Business Journal. And Hyperion Solutions Corporation of Sunnyvale, California. You done good. Our Caught You Doing Something Right for the day. It's nice to catch companies and people doing things right. It feels a whole lot better, frankly, than catching them doing things wrong. You know, it's enough folks doing things wrong out there, and there's a whole bunch of them. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call. The unions have an issue with the Department of Homeland Security. This interesting, and it gets into some of the priorities of the Bush administration. I'll tell you about that right after we take this call. Let's talk to Alan in Amarillo, Texas. Hey, Alan.
Yes, from listening to you, I get the impression that we on the left really need to organize and think more of a longer-term planning, because these Republicans are really, really organized and got us in a bind.
That's right. They started in the 60s when Barry Goldwater went down in defeat. Joe Coors, primarily, with his Castle Rock Foundation, his millions and millions of dollars in the Coors Brewery fortune. He funded the Heritage Foundation along with Richard Mellon Scaife and a few other people, and then they funded as well a whole bunch of other right wing think tanks. And this was in the early 70s, and the plan was a 20-30 year plan, a full generation to take over America and make America safe for the rich once again. Turn America away from democracy and toward aristocracy. And in order to do this, what they had to do was figure out a way to cause average Americans, average working people, to identify with the rich rather than to identify with other working people. To think, someday I may get the lottery, or someday I may invent something that will make me a billionaire, and therefore we have to make America a very, very comfortable place for billionaires, where it's a good thing. And what, frankly, I don't think they anticipated, and certainly the average American doesn't anticipate, is that when you do that, when you create rigid classification or rigidity within the class structure, and we have that now more so than we've had since 1928, where it's harder and harder for people to break out of poverty and get into the middle class. It's harder and harder for people to break out of the middle class and become wealthy in the United States. And it's rarer and rarer that wealthy people become middle class people. This is the situation right now, that when that happens, that poverty hardens and the quality of life for the entire country begins to disintegrate, including that of the wealthy, because we're all in this together, and you have an explosion of diseases, you have a lot of social problems, crime starts going up, lots and lots of social problems that are the result of these things. They just, frankly, I don't think that they had anticipated this. I think they believe their own PR.
Yeah, it sounds like it would help the middle class to organize and fight back. It'd help us financially, and we got to realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way to do that, Alan, and you're absolutely right, and thanks for the call on that. I do appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And the way to do that, of course,
is, or one of the most effective ways to do that, frankly, in my opinion, is by participating in with organized labor, by getting, you know, joining a union or getting a union into the shop where you work, participating in some way, supporting organized labor, because organized labor is the only way, frankly, that I know of, other than possibly participating with a political party that represents the interests of working people like the Greens or the Democratic Party, if they are not successfully taken over by the Democratic Leadership Council and all those Republican-light, you know, corporate-friendly folks. There are certainly some very, very good and labor-friendly folks within the Democratic Party. Dennis Kucinich is, you know, the shining star. Paul Wellstone, you know, rest in peace, was a great example of what a Democrat can be. And we need more of them. We need more of them. So participating politically, helping take back the Democratic Party, and promoting these things. Very important, because, as you say, Alan, the middle class is in big trouble right now. In big trouble. And it's going to get worse, because George Bush's economic policies are just driving us over. They're driving us into a ditch right off the edge of the road. Somebody is going to have to pay this debt off. Now he wants to borrow another $2 trillion to privatize Social Security, so he can do like Blair did and hand Social Security over to the private corporations so that they can start raking 5% off the top like they do in England. Social Security Administration only charges about 1%. I mean, that's the total cost of administering it. No, they don't have to pay for gold-plated faucets in the bathroom of their private jets at the Social Security Administration like the insurance executives have. And the banking executives. So here we have the Department of Homeland Security. You'll remember one of the big battles when the Homeland Security bill was being passed that created the Department of Homeland Security, one of the big battles that actually caused a number of people, including Max Cleland, as I recall, to vote against the formation of the Department of Homeland Security, was that there was a little provision snuck into it that essentially allowed the government to union bust its own employees, that weakened the union protections for government employees in the Department of Homeland Security. And the Bush administration argued very, very strongly in favor of this, saying that they needed to have flexibility. They needed to be able to quickly fire people and move people around and change things in the event of terrorist attack and all that. And the union said, hey, that's fine. You can do that. We would still like to represent the working people. I mean, it was what's called a straw man argument. It was a phony argument. They put up a phony argument and then they knock it down, right? And here now we have the last bastion of representation of us within our government, within the Department of Homeland Security. Two of the largest federal unions. This is an article by Chris Strom on govexec.com, their daily briefing. Two of the largest federal unions are threatening to sue the Homeland Security Department over a directive that prohibits employees and contractors from disclosing sensitive but unclassified information. Now, see, you classify information if you don't want anybody to see it. You classify it sensitive if it's like, you know, important stuff. The American Federation of Government Employees and National Treasury Employees Union say the directive and an accompanying non-disclosure agreement are clearly illegal and violate the First and Fourth Amendments. What these are attempts by the Bush administration to make sure that if the Department of Homeland Security screws up in any way, that word of that screw-up never gets out. Now, ironically, this is what conservatives used to rail about. The position the unions are taking in this case is exactly the position that the Barry Goldwater and Everett Dirksen conservatives used to take, and that now the liberals are taking. And there are a few principled conservatives out there, I suppose, who are saying this. And that is that when government acquires too much power, it can become dangerous. It can become oppressive. There have to be limits to all power, whether it's corporate power, whether it's accumulated family wealth, or whether it's government power. There have to be limits. That's what the Bill of Rights is all about. That's what the Constitution is about to a large extent, limiting the power of government. And here you have the union sent letters on November 23rd to DHS Secretary Tom Ridge and General Counsel Joe Whitley demanding that the department immediately withdraw the directive and stop making workers sign the nondisclosure agreement. The unions say they will have no choice but to pursue appropriate legal action. Here's it from the letter. While our members fully appreciate the need to safeguard classified and other highly sensitive information against unauthorized disclosure, the directive and nondisclosure agreements impose restrictions and conditions on DHS employees that go well beyond this legitimate purpose. The union also objected to a provision in the nondisclosure agreement that allows the government to conduct inspections at any time or place for the purposes of ensuring compliance with the agreement. And their letter says, individuals cannot constitutionally be required, as a condition of government employment, to consent to warrantless searches of their residences, cars, or other areas of government property where they have an expectation of privacy. Instead, they have a right under the Fourth Amendment to insist that any search be made pursuant to a valid warrant. Unless one of the narrow exceptions applies, they cannot be penalized for exercising that right. In other words, the government is requiring now Homeland Security employees to sign a document that basically gives away their First and Fourth Amendment rights, that says that the government can come barging into their house anytime they want without a warrant. Now, you know, I'm all in favor of the government having the ability, if they think that somebody has committed a crime and they have any evidence of it at all, having the ability to go before a judge and saying, here's evidence that, you know, that gives us probable cause to believe that that this person might be committing a crime and we would like to have a search warrant. And the judge signs a search warrant. No problem with that. The union has no problem with that. But the Bush administration is forcing government employees to sign a form that says that because they have this job, their home is no longer private. Any government employee that wants to can come barging into their home and say, I'm here to do an inspection to see if you're in compliance with that nondisclosure agreement. Let me look under your bed. Do you have a warrant? No, I don't. You signed this agreement. So this is why we have unions, to protect workers from this. And this is why we limit government power in the United States. These guys at the Bush administration, they are out of control. Out of control. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's go back to the phone lines here. Patrick in Albuquerque, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I wanted to bring up that point again about what's been going on in the Ukraine.
Yes, sir.
Unbelievable. I mean, we've got, you know, people from our country going over there and helping to overturn elections due to exit polls.
Right.
In other countries.
Right.
And then I hear Republicans on MSNBC and other you know, news organizations, you know, praising what's going on over there. You know, the elections are overturned because the exit polls didn't match. And
now,
happening right here.
And now Ed Gillespie, the former Enron lobbyist and now chairman of the Republican National Committee, has gone on record saying that in the next election, 2006, there should be no exit polls whatsoever.
Unbelievable.
Because the last three elections, in the year 2000, the year 2002, and the year 2004, the exit polls showed results that the Republicans had lost when, in fact, the voting machines showed that the Republicans had won. And he thinks that it has a, quote, dispiriting effect on Republicans, end quote.
Oh, no, we couldn't have that.
No, we can't have that. No, absolutely. To have the exit polls show that there might be fraud? No, this is wrong. And so the Republicans have already launched this shot over the bow, this preemptive attack. They're saying no exit polls in 2006. Can you believe
it? Wow. For a thumbs up thing, you just had a thing, you know, like giving a good thumbs up to somebody.
Yeah, caught you doing something right.
Yeah, caught you doing something right. What about, like, John McCain and stuff he's trying to do with the environment?
Yeah, I mentioned that yesterday, in fact.
I didn't catch all your show yesterday, unfortunately.
He called this administration's stance on climate change irrational or irresponsible or something like that. Yeah,
right. And he's a Republican, so we should give thumbs up to these guys too. You know,
I agree.
From the other side of the aisle.
I agree.
You know?
I agree.
When they stand up and do something good like that.
There you go. And I do. I don't hesitate to do that.
I know you do. I
am not a partisan.
You're really good and balanced about that.
Well, I'm not altogether balanced, but I'm open about my bias. But I'm also not partisan. I'm not, you know, I'm not a Democrat. I'm, you know, it's unlike, you know, so many of the talk show hosts on the right who are just, you know, marching lockstep with the Republican Party. I defer from the Democratic Party very often, and maybe that's why they're not sending me millions of dollars like the Republicans send to some of the right wingers. But
well,
in any
case, were so discouraged with the Democratic Party that, like, when Bush came into office and he just steamrolled over everything, and it seemed like the most of the Democrats in Congress and Senate just didn't have a backbone to stand up to him.
Yeah, this is why, in my opinion, the only, well, not the only thing, but maybe the only thing that will save the Democratic Party and give the Democratic Party a good chance in 2006 is if they make Howard Dean the head of the party. Because, you know, this is a guy who gave back the Democrats their spine, and we need more of that.
Well, or Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah, except Kucinich is I don't think that he would work as the leader of the party. He's a great guy, and I support him, and I know him, and I've had him on this program, and you know, I thought he would have made a great president, but I don't, I you know, the job of being the head of the party involves a lot of fundraising, a lot of schmoozing, a lot of, you know, the political stuff.
Oh yeah.
And Dean knows how to do that.
He's better at that.
I watched him as governor here for a decade. He did good. And I think he would do good as head of the party. So that's my hope. We'll see. Patrick, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. And call again sometime. Great to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, where our talking points come from Jefferson, Madison, Thomas Paine, and others, but not from right-wing think tanks or the RNC or the DNC, for that matter. 10 minutes before the hour.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
Real novelists don't go to graduate school, they go to prison. Mike Palasek is one of America's newest, most exciting political storytellers. Palasek is a former federal prisoner for peace, county commissioner, city jail prisoner, Iowa Democratic Party candidate for Congress, football co-captain, small-town newspaper reporter, and bakery delivery truck driver. Check out www.iowapeace.com for Mike's books and read his weekly column, Is This Heaven? The View from Iowa. Go to iowapeace.com for ordering information for Twins, Joe Coffey's Revolution, KGB, The Truth, The Last Liberal Outlaw, and Prophets Without Honor. Palasek's books are recommended by Howard Zinn, Danny Schechter, BlueEar.com, The Des Moines Register, and Prisoners Everywhere.
For thousands of years, peace stood the healing power of herbs. Healing Hollers, an earth-based business in the southern Ozarks, has formulated medical herbal salves proven effective in promoting healing and providing relief for many skin conditions, including a healing salve with antiseptic and antibacterial properties to treat cuts, burns, scalds, and wounds, an antifungal salve safe and effective for athlete's foot, ringworm, nail, and other fungal infections, and a soothing calendula salve to reduce pain and inflammation from dry skin, eczema, and rashes, including diaper rash. These salves contain only herbs and roots organically grown or ethically wildcrafted natural oils and beeswax from the Ozarks. To learn more about these salves and other natural products from Healing Hollers, go to www.healing-hollers.com. That's www.healing-hollers.com.
An international agreement marks a small step toward protecting a fearsome fish. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Great white sharks frighten a lot of people, but people scare sharks even more. Commercial fishing kills a lot of sharks all over the world, and in some places this pressure is excessive. But the global trade in shark meat will now be under closer scrutiny. New rules for selling it are now part of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. George Burgess is a shark expert with the University of Florida, and he's active in shark conservation. He says the international agreement provides different levels of protection to endangered species. The action on white sharks is listed in Appendix 2, and it requires monitoring the trade in shark fins and shark meat.
Some might say, well, so what? We're not a whole lot better off than what we are. White sharks are still dying, fins are still being moved from point A to point B. But the fact of the matter is getting the species listed on Appendix 2 is a first step, and a very significant first step. It puts the animal under a magnifying glass, so any trade in this animal now will have to be monitored very carefully and documented, and so we'll get a much better indication of exactly how much is moving around.
Some parts of the international agreement specifically prohibit trade in some species. The recent action on white sharks does not do that, but Burgess says it's still a great step forward.
Shark populations are on decline in most areas of the world as a result of overfishing and habitat loss. And so getting the largest of the predatory sharks, the white shark, aboard Appendix 2 is a real plus. And so hopefully this will put the plight of sharks worldwide on the front page.
The action on white sharks came during a meeting of international delegates in October. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Don't stand by while democracy dies. Don't stand by. Don't swallow their lies. Don't stand by till we...
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We've got about 2.5-3 minutes here in the end of the program and a couple of phone calls. Let's see if we can get them all in here. Paula in Kentucky on the line. Hey, Paula, welcome to the program. Oop, I'm sorry. Hang on just a second here. That's Paula in Kentucky. Paula, you're live.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Okay. I was calling you talking about unions earlier. I'm a member of a union. I'm a member of the Steelworkers Union, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And just within this area in the past, since Reagan busted, pretty much you might as well say busted the unions in the 80s, there's probably been over 10,000 jobs lost, union jobs lost in this area where I live, which is a tri-state area between Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia.
Oh yeah, the war.
It's probably about a 50-mile radius.
Yeah. The war on organized labor is the war on the American middle class. I mean, just make no mistake about it. And it's a war that Reagan declared when he fired Patco, and that the conservatives have been continuing right up to this day.
Yeah, and the sad part of it is every job. I mean, this last plant, this manufacturing plant, closed probably about last year, and they have already cleared the site out, and they're putting a Walmart there.
Yeah.
That goes to show you what these jobs are being replaced with.
That's exactly it, and it's a tragedy, and welcome to Bush World, Paula. I mean,
exactly.
And that's why we need to get politically active. Paula, thanks for the call. I'm going to move along here to John in Boston. I appreciate your calling in. John, you're on the line.
Hi, hey. Tom.
What's up?
Hey, I'll make this fast. What this country needs, it's not a revolution. It needs an all-out work stoppage. I'm calling for like a peaceful one-day national strike to protest the policies of this junta in Washington, D.C. That's all I have to say.
Okay, well, that's enough. Okay, thanks a lot, John. I appreciate it. Not sure how we'd make that happen. That's the problem. It works a lot better and a lot easier in the smaller European countries where the press is with the exception possibly of Italy, where Berlusconi owns all the press, where the press is still largely free and locally owned, independent. And, you know, massive corporate power has been somewhat constrained. And the country's small enough that you can't keep secrets. And so, you know, when something happens in one city, it spreads to another, it spreads to another. It's a great idea, John. It's a great idea that there should be some sort of national outpouring. And then I've gotten four or five emails in the last couple of days from people who want to have a national, you know, for example, there's one movement on December, as I recall, 14th. Everybody go to their state capital. There are protests being organized around this election, but we just haven't quite hit that critical mass. Maybe what we need is a lot more liberal talk radio out there. That's a possibility. Anyhow, thanks to Louise for the call, John, in Boston. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today, to Ira for engineering it, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to Ben Birch for our archives at White Rose Society, to our sponsors, to all the folks in our chat room, and to you for listening in. Do appreciate it. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivionik Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug? The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise.